wrapped him in cloths and placed him in a manger, because there was no guest room available for them at the inn. And at Christmas, you know, it's one of the times where people struggle most, where people feel lonely, where they feel that they don't have their family or their loved ones or the people run about them that they had before. And at Christmas time, it's the quest of everybody to love and to be loved unconditionally in return. And the great thing for us is that we know that we are loved unconditionally. Jesus loves us unconditionally. It doesn't matter what you did in your past. It doesn't matter what you did yesterday. It doesn't matter what you even did this morning. Because he still loves you. No matter what, he loves you that much. And that the Christmas story assures us that we begin our lives loved. And we'll end our lives loved. Because he loves us. None of us is perfect. None of us gets it right every single step of the way. But he still loves us unconditionally. Just because he loves you. And why does he love you? Because he wants to. And there's nothing you can do that will stop him loving you. Nothing. He will always love you right to the very end. Can we say that about anybody else or anything else? That anybody else love us unconditionally for that amount of time? We can't. He loved the God who created the universe. The God who came to earth in the form of a baby. Loves you and me unconditionally. There is nothing that you can do that will stop him loving you. According to the Guinness Book of World Records, the song White Christmas is the best-selling single of all time, even more than Adele. It was written in 1940 by Irving Berlin in his hotel room, and it's sold over 100 million copies worldwide. And the version sung by Bing Crosby in the film White Christmas has alone sold 50 million copies. And it was written during World War II. And Irving Berlin told his secretary, grab a pen and take down this song. This is his words. I just wrote the best song I've ever written. Heck, I just wrote the best song that anybody's ever written. And so, kind of grandiose statement, but having sold 100 million copies now, there's not going to be too many people that argue with him for the amount of copies that it sold. But while some might suggest that the power of the White Christmas film is in the songs, most of us, I would think, would disagree, and we'd recognise that the other significant draw of the film and the movie, the song, is the theme of love. Because everybody wants to be loved. Don't they? I've never met anybody that doesn't want to be loved. And you will see people that will portray bizarre forms of behaviour. And it kind of drives people away. But what they really want deep down is they want people to love them. They want to be accepted. But they feel that because of the way they are, that they won't be accepted. And so therefore, they're going to manifest this exotic behaviour and drive you away so that you won't love them. And it becomes a vicious circle. And people are crying out for love. And at this time of the year, that's what we can show. We can show people. You know, we have Jesus in our lives. We have Jesus in our hearts. And all we need to do is be Jesus. And I think the story that Willie shared at the start, just about a girl received some groceries and that touched her so deeply. That's why we have the volunteers volunteering at Food Bank. Because a simple bag of groceries touches somebody's life so much. Just showing somebody love, just showing them that you're willing to listen. It might be, you might be the first person that's listened to them in a long time. You might be the first person that's shown them love. You might be the first person ever that has been Jesus to them. That's all they're looking for. You might have love for a good friend, your sister, your brother, your spouse. You might have a shared love for music, for dance. They're all different love themes that have drawn people to the film, White Christmas. It's not about the film. It's about the theme behind it. You ever wonder why people sit and watch films and start to cry? Because it's real. It's something that reflects real life. I don't know about you, but I don't sit in the cinema and look and think, aye, but there's about 100 cameras behind there. There's somebody stood with a wee board going, tch. Do you know the whole... You forget all that when you're sat in the movies, don't you? Does anybody think of that when they're sitting watching? The other night I got to see Star Wars Midnight. So good. I'll tell you, it was amazing. I was completely gone, but at no point did I think there was somebody on this big boom chair going around filming everything that was happening. I was like, nah, none of that. I was encapsulated in the whole thing. The Millennium Falcon's in it. I thought, oh, nobody told me that. And I just, that was it. I was gone at that stage. It's just that this is great. But that's kind of like the wee boy in me. But it was great. But love is a big idea. Love's a huge thing. And most of us would say that we understand it. Even though we're not really that good at actually doing it. All the time. But who understands love? We done that in group one night. How would you explain love? It took a while. Because even though we use the word so often, and some things we might even use it flippantly, like, so you pick up a bar of dairy milk and say, oh, I love dairy milk. Now, you like dairy milk a lot. Do you unconditionally love a bar of chocolate? Might I suggest that you don't? May I strongly advise you not to? But you like it a lot. But you don't, there's a difference between, so you have the same feeling for a bar of dairy milk as you do for your spouse? Not a chance. And sometimes the meaning of the word love, we lose that. Because we use it all the time. We love the people that are closest to us. We love the people that are good to us. But we struggle to love those who hate us. People who are not like us. Or those that place a demand on our lives. And that's when it becomes challenging. One of the things that we need to think about it, and when we come into those settings and into those contexts, the way that we respond, the way that we react, the way we act, does it look like Jesus? That's been my phrase for the last couple of months when we encounter things. Does it look like Jesus? Does it look like him? Is that how he would have responded? Is that how he would have reacted? Is that how he would have acted? Is that what he would have did? And we need to do it that way. That's what love is. Does it look like Jesus? And I was talking with somebody recently, and they were talking about the story of the woman who was caught in adultery. Now, there was a man involved as well. I don't know if you know about that kind of stuff, but it takes two to tango kind of thing. So there was obviously a man involved. We don't hear anything about him, but we hear about the woman. And can you imagine the scene? She's out in the street at this stage. There's a crowd of people running about her. Now, here's the thing. Do you know, I don't know how you see... The film Jesus of Nazareth is really, really unhelpful. I did really say that. It's really, really unhelpful because you don't really see the reality behind it, the passion that's involved and stuff. That woman is highly likely had nothing on. But you see that in the film. She's fully clothed. She's just been caught. That's the key. She was just caught in the act of adultery. So therefore, when they caught her, the man was there as well. They were both together. Somebody walked in the room and they were in the process. I won't explain any further, but I'm sure you gather what I mean. And so therefore, the lady was taken outside and she most likely was naked or at very best, partially clothed. So is it any wonder Jesus didn't look at her, that he sat doodling in the sand or the ground? Probably what I'd have done. But then he turns around and he says, let the person who's without sin cast the first stone. Very quickly everybody left. Then he says, where are your accusers? And she says that they've gone. And he says, so go and sin no more. He showed her love that probably she had never been shown before, in a way that she had never been shown before. That's what the love of Jesus looks like. Non-judgmental, caring, compassionate love. And that's what people are looking at for now. But the term love is used so loosely in our time that it simultaneously expresses affection, affinity, preference, physical attraction, emotional connection, and perhaps, least of all, mutual commitment. But ...2,000 years ago, love is expressed in the passage in Luke as God's commitment to see an ancient promise through. A promise to right the wrongs of the world and to fix the greatest problem of the human heart, which is sin, through a baby. And for those of you who are there on Sunday evening at the Salvation Army, that baby, Jesus, he's the reason for the season. That's what this season's about. I love getting presents. You want to see what I'm getting for Christmas? I'm excited. But I love giving presents as well. I love to see Charlene's face. I love to see the kids' faces in the morning when they open their presents. It's just a joy to behold, and it's great to see that you've made that day for them and they get stuff that they can play with, that they can use, that hopefully will keep them entertained and depending what it is that you get them, educate them, whatever it is. And that's because I love my kids, because I love my wife. And it's the same for you. But how much more does God our Father love us? The gifts that he gives us, the gift that he gave us in his Son. Unconditionally. Do you know, so I was chatting with somebody earlier and do you know we have the whole thing with Santa and have you been good this year? And if you, are you on the naughty list? And so if you've seen the film Elf and his dad's on the naughty list, and what do we associate that your present will be if you're on the naughty list? Keep the house warm. Do you know, but, and we have, so if you've been good, you'll get this. If you've been naughty, you'll get this. There's none of that with Jesus. There's none of, if you don't love me, you're getting this. He loves you anyway. There's no coal up Jesus' sleeve. God's a God with big sleeves. And all he wants to do is just shower you with love and compassion and grace and mercy, because he absolutely adores you. And it's about time, leading up to Christmas, that we start to adore him. You might get some nice stuff for Christmas, but don't adore that. Might be good, but it's not that good. And that was the whole point of the film that I was trying to show you. It's not about stuff. What are you worshipping leading up to Christmas? What are you worshipping on Christmas morning? Are you worshipping that stuff that you unwrap? It might be nice stuff. But is it going to lead you into eternity? No. You'd be fortunate if you still have it in 5 years. Depending what it is. What are we worshipping up this Christmas? Sin in us is missing the mark of responding to God's love for us. And since the Garden of Eden, humans have been looking for our own way, our own benefit, in the short time that we have on earth. We constantly try and dare ourselves. You go into Easton's round the corner and you look at the different sections in the books, and there's a self-help section. And there'll be things like chicken soup for the woman's soul, there'll be chicken soup for the man's soul. You know, I like chicken soup, but it doesn't come in a book. It comes in a can. Unless you make your own. Right? Or there's the seven whatever things to lead you to success, or do you know whatever, the 21 irrefutable laws of leadership. And there's all these different things. If you read all those books, will you get to heaven? Or wherever it is we go at the end. Will you get there? No. If you put your hope in Jesus, it's a much better bet, isn't it? And so you read chicken soup for whatever, and then you miss the thing that you're aiming for. What's going to happen? You're going, oh, woe is me. I've missed it. According to who? According to the author of Chicken Soup for Whatever. Do you know God's got a book? And you have a much better chance of getting something out of that. Read that. Don't read Chicken Soup for the Soul. Self-help books. Are they going to help you, really? They're very good at highlighting your inadequacies. But when you read God's book, it might show you your inadequacies, but it shows you how to get sorted. Because it introduces you to somebody that can sort them out for you. Somebody who loves you. With all your wee foibles and all those wee things. And he still loves you anyway. And that's why I would suggest that you read his book rather than the other one. We hurt each other. We take from each other. When all along we were designed to be like him, he's a God who gives. We were created in his image, therefore we should be giving. He made us that way. And he gives us love so that we can redistribute it to other people. That's why he shows you love. He doesn't show you love just to make you feel warm and fuzzy inside. I mean, that feels great at the time. But he gave you that so that you can go and give that to other people. So you can be him. And that's the point. If we do this at this time of the year, when people are sitting in their houses, when they're alone, when they don't have anything, they're in need. And if you're in need, you feel your need much more at Christmas. Because all you see on TV, if you have a telly, all you see is all these adverts. If you have the... Charlene's funny on this. Do you know, like, you watch the... especially the adverts for perfume. Wear this perfume and you're going to get men. Wear this aftershave and you'll get hot chicks that look like this. And that's essentially the message behind what those things are saying. It's the biggest... That was good, I like that. So, is it true? Have you you've seen the Lynx advert? You know, you spray this Lynx and then you're going to have hundreds of women chasing you along beaches and stuff. It's just ridiculous. And the mindset behind it is because people want people to like them, to love them, the whole thing. And we can show love at this time of the year. This is a time where people... Do you know that the suicide rate rockets at this time of the year? The amount of calls that go to the Samaritans and Lifeline and other organisations like that more than doubles at this time of the year. And yet everybody's like, "Oh, it's the most wonderful time of the year." Right? It might be for you, but what about your neighbour? What about the person that's alone? What about the person that doesn't have any electric in their meter? That changes it a bit, doesn't it? We had somebody come into Food Bank a couple of years ago. They hadn't had electric for 8 weeks. In this day and age, that's unacceptable. You might think, well, that's no my responsibility. No, it's no, but thinking like that doesn't he look like Jesus. There are people who are in need. We watch the telly. Now, I started off with like, oh, five sleeps, the whole thing. I'm excited. But I'm also mindful of the people who are not excited. I'm mindful of the people who, do you know what, at this time of year it appears that they are absolutely destitute, and some of them are. And do you know with your help, yous are actually amazing. How many hampers have we given so far? 297 hampers we've gave away so far this year, which is amazing. Without you guys... we couldn't do that without the community. Do you know where God gave us love and we've to give it to other people? Well, those people got groceries and they gave some of them away so that we can give them to other people. And we, 297 families, have got that what they might not have had. And if yous weren't here, it wouldn't have been 297, let me tell you. It's amazing. That's love. That's compassion, that's unconditional love. Because sometimes people come in and they're a mess. But that's not our place to judge. Jesus didn't judge the woman caught in adultery. She was a mess. She was naked in the street. Think about being naked in the street. Something you just never ever want to experience. The embarrassment. Everybody knew who she was. They highlighted that she was the problem, that she was the one who was caught in sin. The man, not a mention. Can you imagine the embarrassment, the humiliation? And this is a time of the year where people feel embarrassed. People feel humiliated. People feel alone. And see, for us that don't struggle with all that, we can show a wee bit of love to somebody else, make their Christmas a bit better. It might only take an hour, might take less, to let somebody know that somebody does love them, that somebody does care for them, that somebody is compassionate toward them. that doesn't judge them. That's what Jesus did for us. Then we should be doing that for other people. God knew that love, real love, modelled for us, revealed to us, touching us, filling us and changing us, would fix the love problem of the heart. The plan was simple. A child. Jesus would be born. That messed with everybody's thinking. Because when they saw Messiah coming, he was coming on a big white horse with swords and every weapon available at that time. And there was going to be a big fight and he was going to overthrow the oppressors and that was how Messiah was going to come. Oh, yes. That's what they thought. And then he comes as a baby. You imagine the disappointment. It was huge, massive. But you know what Jesus means? The name Jesus means? The Lord saves. And if people understood that, the Lord saved. The Lord has come to save us. He hasn't come the way that we expected it at the time. He's come the way that he chose to do it. And the thing is that he's got it right thus far. I'm not prepared to argue with that. And he would show us exactly how to selflessly love one another. He's a great example. A great example. Not only would he show us how to love one another, he would also endure the most extreme expression of love by suffering and dying for us. And then, because he did that, he broke the grip of sin and death over all our lives. That's how much he loved us. You might have done nothing that would warrant him to love you, it would warrant his love. That's no his concern. He made you in his image. He looks at you and he thinks, look at that gorgeous wee face. He loves to look at your face. Please know that. That should put a smile on your face. He loves to look at your face and he just looks at you and goes, I love you. I really love you. And no matter what you do, I'm still going to love you. No matter what you say, I'm still going to love you. Because I made you in my image to do the things that I did. I've shown you the example of how to do it. Now go and do it. Go and be me as much as you can to those people. I know you make mistakes, but I still love you anyway. That's the reality of this. It's us that feel bad about ourselves. He feels good about you. He thinks you're great. And if we were going to go down the American line, he thinks you're awesome. Because he doesn't make mistakes. Really, doesn't he? I make them regularly. But he thinks I'm great. Still. And you know what? I know that I'll make more mistakes. Because I'm consistently inconsistent. And he thinks I'm brilliant. But he thinks you're brilliant as well. It's not about me. It's all about him. But he hasn't set you up for failure. He has set you up for overwhelming success as long as you do it in his name. Overwhelming success, not just a good chance. Overwhelming success. Look up overwhelming in the dictionary. That's how much success he set you up for. He thinks you're brilliant. He thinks you are magnificent. Because he chose you. And that which he chose you to do, the dream that he placed in your heart, that's for you. And it's between you and him. And you have to go and do that. He gave you that. He didn't give that to the person sat beside you. Because they've got something else. But he loves you. In Jesus, we see that love is constant and sacrificial. It's not like the weather, which is so changeable. Love's a constant. Never changes, fails, keeps records of wrongs, always perseveres, always withstands our greatest failures and successes, and reminds us we are loved because of who we are, not for what we do. Jesus loves you for who you are. Just for being you, that's why he loves you. Doesn't even matter what you do. He loves you anyway. That's amazing in itself. So, Jesus is ready to take our imperfections and mistakes. Just take them in his hand and just say, if you just surrender all that to my love, he'll take it away. And that's the greatest gift this Christmas. You might have some good gifts lined up to give to your loved ones. And I'm happy. That's great. And I hope that they have the best Christmas morning. They have the biggest smiley faces that you've ever seen. But it doesn't come close to the gift that God has for us and that Jesus has. He made the example. And so he now wants to take your imperfection, your mistakes. And if you surrender that to him, to his love, then you can have the most wonderful relationship together. And he doesn't promise that life's going to be a bed of roses. But he promises that no matter what it is that you're going through, he's in it with you. Because he loves you. And he cares for you. And he's saying to you, you don't need to do this alone. And he has that for you. But do you know what? He has that for everybody that we meet outside of this building. And my encouragement today is this. That love that Jesus has for us, that we take that and we go and give that to other people in a way that they have never known, that they have never experienced. And you might never have done it like that before, but that's the challenge. And if we do that, do you know what? That's the real meaning of Christmas. To show love where you won't get love in return. To show compassion where you won't get compassion in return. To show affection. To show grace and mercy where you might not get that in return. But I would rather do that and not be rewarded, and then it tells us that we receive a reward in heaven. I'm not doing this for rewards. Let's just be honest. I don't care about rewards. I just care about seeing people come to know Jesus. I care about people coming into a relationship with somebody who loves them for who they are. No matter what. Do you want to stand? Father, I thank you that you love us unconditionally, and I genuinely pray that as a church and as a body of believers and just as a group of people, that we would have the best Christmas we've ever had. That we would know your love, your joy, your peace, your compassion, your grace, your mercy, all that stuff. But Lord, I pray that we would experience it so much in such an overwhelming manner that it would just bubble over. That we would just overflow with all that stuff, and we could not fail to give it to the people round about us, whether they know you or not. Would you make us Jesus to our neighbours? Would you make us Jesus to the people in our street? Would you make us Jesus to the people in our towns, our villages, our city? I pray that this Christmas, that we would be able to more than ever before show unconditional love to the people who our world would tell us don't deserve love, who don't deserve mercy and grace and compassion. They don't deserve time of day. Jesus, would you make us the people that turns that on its head? And I pray, Jesus, that you would change our focus from being insular to being outward. Father, we thank you for what you've done for us. And I pray that we wouldn't keep it a secret. Thank you for this opportunity to gather in your name, and we love you. Amen. If there's anybody here and you're sick, or you would like prayer for anything, we would love the opportunity to pray for you. So please, if that is you, just tap somebody on the shoulder or just say to somebody, hey, would you mind praying for me? It would be a privilege for us. Thank you.